This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, ready to rock and roll. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Tuesday, and with the week accelerated, Bills are on the practice field with a Saturday game coming up, and today essentially serves as a Wednesday practice. Installs going on, and actually practice just wrapped up, and in just a short period of time, we're expected to be joined by one Daquan Jones, defensive tackle for the Buffalo Bills, as part of our Fresh Off the Field series brought to you by Austin Air. So we await his arrival, and we'll bring that to you as soon as possible. But some good news on the practice front, and we'll bring you right up to date here because, as I said, we're expecting Daquan Jones momentarily. Bills practice updates presented by LECOM, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. And the good news is as follows. We know that Ryan Bates did not play in last week's game. Neither did Jordan Phillips. Both of those players out on the practice field today. We'll find out what their practice participation levels were. Maybe not until tomorrow. I'm trying to remember. I don't know that an injury report necessarily has to come out today. It might be until tomorrow, but we'll see.
Saturday. Today's a Wednesday, not a Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it might have to be released today. In any event,
I think it might be 72 hours before the game.
In any event, yeah. What's important here is both are working their way back into the practice setting, coming off ankle and shoulder injuries respectively. So that's a good sign. Mitch Morse, as you know, is in concussion protocol. He was not seen out there during the media viewing portion of practice. And Boogie Basham, who has a calf injury, was not seen out there at practice today. Ike Butker practicing with the team on the active roster now, and his timing couldn't be better with Mitch Morse in the concussion protocol. With Bates back in the fold, Steve, it prompts an interesting development on the interior of the offensive line. Last week, with Ryan Bates out of the mix, Greg Van Roten stepped in at center for Mitch Morse. David Quessenberry played right guard. But with Bates back, right, a guy who can also play center, it's going to be very interesting to see what the Bills decide to do up front, assuming Mitch Morse can't get back in time to play in clear concussion protocol. If that's the case, you either have Bates playing center or Van Roten playing center, and presumably the other guy's playing guard.
I would say I think Bates is the guy at center. And it may be Van Roten at guard, or it may be Kessenberry at guard as well, depending on what they feel like their swing tackle needs to be behind Dawkins and Brown. So if they've got another option at tackle, Kessenberry might be a great go-to because of his size, because he's tackle size. And if you want a guy down inside, he's a little bit more like Saffold. Bates and Van Roten, while they're heavy and they're not as tall and that kind of thing, so that's an interesting. Yeah, I mean they'll have this all. The coaches will know this. We'll have to wonder about it until we see it. To me, Bates is the guy that goes in for Morse.
And the pivot. That's your anticipation. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that, but we'll have to see what happens.
I don't know that Van Roten. Well, Van Roten's no question taking more reps at guard this year than Kessenberry has, but Kessenberry ended the game last week against the Dolphins at left right guard, and let's not forget how it ended. They were pushing those guys around up front.
Yeah.
I mean, Devin Singletary had 36 yards out of the 65 yards in that whole drive. 36 of it was, and I say 65 of the yards, 21 of them were penalty yards on the pass interference.
Right.
The rest of them, half of them, were gotten by Devin Singletary up front, and those guys pushed him around. So, they might say, that worked pretty good with Kessenberry in there. You know, that kind of thing.
Possible. Certainly possible.
Yeah. Depends. The right guard is what we're talking about, basically. For me,
right.
I think Bates is the guy at center, and whoever goes in at right guard, I mean, that's the, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
If you put Kessenberry at guard, well, who's your backup tackle?
It's him.
Yeah.
Still.
That's the only guy. So, yeah. So you might not want him out at guard because if he goes down, then you got no tackle.
Right. But they did that for the second half last week.
Yeah, but they had two guys go down then.
Well, they didn't have Bates to begin with.
Right.
And then Morse leaves.
Your plan to get through.
So they kick Van Roten from right guard into center. And,
right. So your plan, thinking, hoping you could just get through the game is exactly what happened. They just got through the game.
Yeah.
With those guys. But
so you may hold Kessenberry as your swing tackle.
Remember, we found out last year when when Butker went down is about the time when they started running the ball better. So you never know what's going to take. And Butker is, you know, they like him. I mean, he's a good player, has been, and he's coming off the Achilles is tough. But you never know what kind of mix you're going to get up in the offensive line. They shuffle those guys around like it doesn't make any difference, right? I mean, Kessenberry goes in at right guard last week. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah.
They're in deep trouble. Well, then all of a sudden they put this drive together, and it's like, whew, that was a thing of beauty. So you never know, because the defense has something to say about how that goes, obviously, but your offense and who's talking to who. And
it was a great drive.
It was a fantastic drive with two guys that had no business playing in the spots they were playing in.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that where you get this thing, and maybe they do it out here in practice, and they go, you know what, let's not, you know. But you know they're looking at it going, well, why did that happen?
Right. And that was with no reps. Like, I mean, they had reps in practice with Van Roten at guard leading into that game, but they didn't have practice reps with Van Roten at center and Kressenberry at guard.
Yeah.
They didn't have that during the practice week, and it worked out relatively well. So,
the offensive line is really – it is its own team sport within a team sport. Hmm. Because you got eight guys on your roster, and at times they're all playing different spots or the wrong spot. It's a pecking order. If Deion Dawkins is healthy, he is always and forever you're going to be the left tackle with this group in these years, right? That's the linchpin right there. And then, you know, when he's healthy, Spencer Brown's going to be your right tackle. And then, you know, it goes down this. And then when something starts happening, when these pieces start dropping out with an ankle or with a knee, with a, you know, whatever, then all of a sudden it's just like a deck of cards. They just start shuffling that deck, and you just never know how it's going to go. And it's all this big mystery to everybody who's just watching.
Right.
But in the room, they're going, oh, yeah, if this happens, okay, now you're in. You don't even have to talk about it. You're the guy. And then they go in and they start playing. Because they got calls. If you've ever listened to a game right there where you, like in a practice or whatever, the offensive linemen are screaming down inside there. And when you get different voices in there trying to communicate all this, the line calls and who you got and who I've got, you and I have got these two guys together, let's go. You've got that guy. What if he does, you know, all this intricate choreography.
Yeah.
It just seems like impossible to pull that off. When you're mixing guys up. And yet, it happens every week in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's amazing how they pull it off. It is really a team sport inside.
You
got to
make it happen.
Sport.
You don't have a choice.
It really is. Yeah, and there's no choice, too. Yes, yeah. Right.
So, it's put up or shut up, literally.
But they did an outstanding job there. With
they did.
Kessenberry coming in at right guard and those guys and Van Roten at center. And then to go down the field on that final drive, burn off and just have that drive
o'clock.
We've been talking about all week. 15 plays, 7 runs, 7 passes, and the field goal to win it. Wow. Mm-hmm. And they did it with, you know.
Yeah. The forecast for Chicago on Saturday, virtually unchanged. Mostly cloudy skies, partly cloudy in the afternoon, a high of 11. I think we picked up a degree. Winds out of the west, 20 to 30 miles per hour sustained. Could occasionally gust over 40. So that'll put the wind chills in the negative digits. And then in the evening down there, the Bills will be gone by then, but it's going down to 1 at night there. So that'll be interesting. So wind could play a factor in the game on Saturday, obviously, affect the passing game, the kicking game. And we, along with the media, had an opportunity to talk to offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey this morning prior to practice. And he did admit last week, he had two different game plans, one in the event that they did have measurable snowfall on the field, and another if they didn't. And obviously he went with the game plan of not having measurable snow on the field so they could just kind of operate as business as usual.
Yeah.
He said if there was measurable snow on the field, there were certain cuts that receivers just flat out would not be able to make on certain play calls. Yeah. And so those were pulled from the game plan. This week, he said he's probably going to do the same thing, have two different game plans, one in the event that the wind is not going to negatively impact the game, and two, one if the wind is negatively impacting the game.
What we could gather from what he said about how they planned, what their process was, the game plan was the game plan, and then if it was going to be bad weather and bad footing because of snow, there were certain sections and play selections they were just going to remove. So they didn't go to those. So it would just shorten the playlist, and that's what would be the secondary game plan for bad weather. It's not really like they have a completely different style of offense. It would just be that there were certain calls they didn't feel comfortable making. So, yeah, it's really the same plan with an edited version
for
weather.
So we'll see what Saturday holds weather-wise. It's looking like it is going to be a windy day. Is it windy enough in the stadium to impact the passing game? We'll just have to wait and see. And there are some of the opinion that if it is super windy and the passing game's impacted, that's an advantage for the Bears, who, as we know, are a very good running team with Jordan Montgomery and quarterback Justin Fields, number one in the league in running the football. They're also the worst passing offense in football, but if you can't throw the ball, no harm done to them. So it could be a contributing factor to not only how the game is played, but how the game unfolds, although the Bills are a pretty good run defense. Let's go around the NFL, presented by Kalata Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And Jalen Hurts is a gigantic story in Philadelphia right now because he has a sprained shoulder, and his status is up in the air for their big division showdown against the Cowboys on Saturday. So Nick Sirianni, the head coach of the Eagles, met the media today and said he is not yet ruling Hurts out for the game, but some of the media reports are indicating his status is very much up in the air for their game against the Cowboys this weekend. And yeah, you have wiggle room. You're 13-1. But, you know, big division game. You'd like to, you know, knock the Cowboys down a peg
or
whatever.
It's interesting, too, because he got hurt in the Bears game, the Bills' next opponent.
Yeah, last week.
And so if you want a measuring stick of how the Bills are going to measure up against maybe some of the elite NFC teams, they play the same team the Philadelphia Eagles did just six days ago, and they beat them by 5, the Eagles did. Now, Hurts went down late in that game, right? It was very late.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So
I didn't really see any of that game. I got to watch it this week.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how the Bills fare against a defense that the Eagles just faced this last week, too. But Jalen Hurts got hurt running the ball.
And he had 3 rushing touchdowns in the game.
And he got – it was kind of an innocuous tackle, but when you're running with a ball, we know you're not given the kind of protection that you're given in the pocket. Guy wrapped him up, had both arms to his side, had his arms pinned to his side because he was wrapped in a bear hug, and he came down on his side with a full weight of a defensive lineman on him who was not trying to let up at all.
Yeah.
And it was like an old-time hit and very legal, very clean. Hurts doesn't get up.
Yeah.
So
that's that. And then the Packers on Monday Night Football beat the Rams. Rams officially, mathematically eliminated from playoff contention in the NFC. Packers still alive at 6-8. So there's that. I don't know if you saw this, Steve, but the Rams tied the 1999 Broncos as the worst defending champion in terms of one-loss record the next year. Oof. They're already there, and they have 3 games to play. Yikes.
Yeah. That's a hard spot to be in.
And then there was some news concerning their injured quarterback, Matthew Stafford, who's on IR. He says he's not retiring from the NFL despite his neck injury that landed him on injured reserve in the first place. So it looks like his plan is to come back next year. There was some question after the team acquired Baker Mayfield off waivers last week. So we'll see what comes of that in the offseason. That'll be interesting, to say the least.
I watched that game last night, and certainly. And it was interesting, too, because I also watched the Manning cast with Peyton and Eli talking about Baker and what he was thinking and what would be what their impressions were of what he would be able to do inside the offense and how they would call it, what would be available to him, some of the things that he would know about that he wouldn't know about. It was really interesting to hear those two guys talk about what Baker Mayfield was going through. And as they were talking about it, Baker stunk. He stunk. And it looked like he always looks just a little bit like I didn't know where he was going with the ball, a little bit panicky in the pocket, running around, trying to make some sort of, you know, heroic throw that was not nearly good enough and not nearly close enough to the people he was throwing it to. Threw a bad interception down the sideline to the Packers. Just was not a good game for Baker Mayfield. So when you talk about Matt Stafford not retiring from the NFL, ain't going to be any competition for him at the starting quarterback. Because Baker, there's no way I can see that doesn't
– No way, you said.
No way Matt Stafford loses the starting job to Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, he's been there. They pulled off a giant trade to make it happen. So I get it. I understand why that's the case. But – Yeah, I guess you'll have to see what his elbow looks like, quite frankly. I mean, I'm assuming Stafford's elbow will be fine, let alone his neck. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's a wait and see. Time now, though, for our fresh off-the-field interview brought to you by Austin Air, the official clean air provider of the Buffalo Bills. And here, as promised, is Bills defensive tackle Daquan Jones. Daquan, welcome. How you doing? Fresh off the field, literally.
Yeah,
thanks
good.
For getting over here so fast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I got to say, like we've said it on the show too, you have been a horse up front for this defense, man. Like,
that.
You, I mean, locking it down. I know you got some help up front with your boys on the interior there. But there have been guys, you know, coming in and out of the lineup. You know, Jordan's trying to get back now. And you've just been a rock in there. How would you characterize this transition overall? You know, you're new to the roster in the spring. But it seems like you just kind of stepped right in, and it was like an easy transition, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I give credit to Coach E, you know, just getting me right early on in the system. And, you know, that locker room and those guys in that room are, I mean, they're great guys, and they made everything kind of just flow real easy, you know, training camp, OTAs, all that stuff. Like, I don't know, it kind of just picked up. I feel like I've been here for the last couple of years, you know what I mean? But and it feels very comfortable and natural, and I don't know, everything's kind of just gelling together.
Yeah, you got here. It's a little bit of a combination. You kind of got some experienced guys down inside, you and Jordan Phillips, even Ed Oliver now in his fourth year, Tim Settle.
Yeah.
Guys have played a little bit, but on the outside, you got some younger guys like AJ, Boogie, Greg Rousseau, those kind of guys. Well, Vaughn was a difference maker, but when he was here, obviously. Give me a little bit about the dynamic between you old guys down inside. I say old, but you know what I mean. The veteran guys down inside and the guys who are in their first, second year on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're doing a good job as far as, like, helping them guys out when they need it. You know what I mean? You don't want to give these guys too much information because this game is a lot at the end of the day. And whatever I can do to kind of just help them guys out in small details, I'm going to try to do that. And I feel like they've been doing a heck of a job all year just – every game getting better at something and focusing on like a new technique or key recognition or formation recognition. And, you know, it's been showing all season, you know what I mean? And, you know, this past week was kind of hairy in the run game, but at the same time, we've got to get back to the fundamentals and basics and, you know, move on to the next. But I feel like they're doing a great job of picking up the little details and getting better at it each week.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the run game a little bit because your guys – style is a penetrating, you know, get up the field style, even in the run game. And while that's great because you can, you know, spill things or force a running back to reroute in the backfield and then half the battle's won already, at the same time, you know, you can see missed tackles on occasion. So how do you find the balance between getting the penetration you want while also trying to make the quote-unquote textbook-type tackle? Because you're flying up the field, and it's like, you can't break down in, like, a half a second. You know what I mean?
They're tough, but that's, like, the nature of the business. You know what I mean? Like, we signed up for that, and, you know, our job isn't easy. But just the plays we got to make, and, you know, we left a lot out there Saturday. And just stuff we got to make, man. Like, as simple as it is, like, we got to go out there and just make the plays we're meant to make and, you know, get off the field.
One of the things about the defense, we talk to Leslie all the time, and, mm-hmm. and we get, you know, scouting reports, and we can see on film, we watch too. You guys almost never get out a nickel. Mm-hmm. Right? It's your base defense, really, with Taron on there and, you know, Matt and Tremaine on as linebackers, and you guys with your hands on the ground, all four of you. What do you think it would like this team in Chicago, particularly maybe in this kind of weather, would that be the kind of game plan where you say, you know what, we almost want to dare these guys to throw because they run the ball pretty well. Let's throw AJ Klein out there, go three linebackers, go a little heavier in the box and see if we can lure them into throwing it rather than playing our nickel and inviting them to run.
I mean, we went through the game plan a little bit today. I mean, whatever really Coach Frazier feels comfortable with doing, I mean, I think we're confident in both ways in stopping run or playing the pass in either nickel or base. And, you know, again, it was just a lot of missed tackles last week that kind of messed us up. I mean, we've been playing nickel all year and stopping run pretty well. So I don't want to, you know, say it's either nickel or base, whatever that. But whatever, you know, Coach Frazier kind of feels would be the best for our game plan going forward and going into this game, I think we'll do that. But I think we can play either way.
When you guys struggle stopping the run, what's the basic thing that happens? Or is there...
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, the Green Bay, the Jets, and even last week, I mean, a lot of missed tackles, you know, within at the line of scrimmage or a couple yards up the field that kind of broke free and kind of, you know, gashed us a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. I think if we make those tackles, I mean, the run game is a whole different story.
Yeah. Looking at – I know it's a short week, so you're probably just diving into the film, but Fields – I mean, he's got 1,000 yards rushing already.
Yeah.
You know, we're only 14 games in. So what is it about his running style that kind of makes you sit up in your chair when you're watching the tape?
I mean, just watching it last night, I mean, he's fast. I mean, when he decides to run on, you know, a scramble, he kind of, you know, takes the open grass and, you know, you see him get 20 yards a pop, and it looks effortless, you know what I mean? Then the QB runs too. I mean, once he gets the edge, it's kind of game over. I mean, so we got to make sure that we are on our, you know, P's and Q's and make sure we're doing, you know, our job up front and our gap integrity, and make sure our ends do a good job of sitting down and reading that quarterback and you know, making them run lateral and not vertical.
Where do defenses, and when you watch these guys play in their game plan, what do defenses fear most when they play Chicago? I mean, what you notice that every team does against this team?
I mean, really, you have to get after them. I mean, because they run the ball really well. So, like, you just have to be able to control the line of scrimmage. And again, it's on the D-line and really linebackers too, the whole defense. But really control the line of scrimmage and make sure that, you know, we can make them one-dimensional and knock out the run game. I mean, if you can do that and make them pass the ball, you know, it's a less of a – threat to have a team to be able to do two things instead of one thing.
Right.
Gonna be pretty chilly.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen the forecast.
Yeah, like 4 degrees.
Wasn't that bad here Saturday night last week? Wasn't that cold? Yeah, I mean, no. It was cold, but I know you big guys don't mind the cold as much, but that's getting some serious stuff, plus some wind, mm-hmm. throw a little wind chill in. Not that you're not used to temperatures in upstate New York. I don't know if a lot of Bills fans know this. You're from Johnson City down in the Binghamton area.
Yep.
How cool has it been to be much closer to home, you know, in your professional football city, and have you, if you still have family there, have they been able to get up to some home games?
Yeah. I mean, my brother, my grandma came to one of her first NFL game a couple weeks ago. And,
oh, nice.
You know, I've been in the league for 9 years in her first game, so, you know, for her to be able to come up and make the trip was pretty cool. My younger brother came, and you know, my dad comes up every weekend, my older brother and my nieces and nephews. So be able to see all them, and, you know, it's great to be able to do that on the weekends and be able to, you know, kick it with them and hang with them, and especially on game day to look up there and see them in the stands. So I've been really enjoying that.
So you got this this team. You land on this team, and they got all these expectations. They're, like, the favorite. They're the one seed now headed into the playoffs. You're coming down the home stretch, mm-hmm. and you're the one seed, and everything's right in front of you. You see him, they signed John Brown, he comes in. They signed Cole Beasley, he comes in. It's all hands on deck. What's the vibe in the locker room like when you know these games get big, you know, your reward for winning this big game, Yeah, great. There's a bigger one this week. Here we go.
That's Right. I mean, you got to stay hungry, man. We're in a D line room this morning, and you know, we just kept talking about and preaching about how, you know, each and every week we come in and try to get better. No matter if we win, lose, draw, it doesn't matter. But to come in and get better, because we know what the end goal is, and whatever we have to do to fix the stuff we need to fix, to get right, to go out there and play a better, more dominant football game on defense. That's what we have to do, and that message is all throughout the locker room. And I think everyone knows, you know, what we have to do this week going into Chicago, especially this week in practice, to make sure we all hone in on the little details so we don't get sloppy with that going into the bigger games. Really just kind of focus on, you know, day one fundamentals and making sure we're all on our stuff.
Speaking of the D-line room, Daquan, there was a photo recently on social media, so we want to kind of get the 411 on exactly what's going on with this picture for our radio listeners. It's basically the majority of the D-line group. Ed Oliver is shirtless outside in the snow. Daquan is suns out, guns out as well, and the tank top and shorts. And who's that? Who's that in the middle? Is that
Boogie? Boogie Basham.
It's Boogie. Boogie. Okay, I thought it was.
The bibs.
Yeah. Looks like he's wearing an apron or overalls. He's wearing overalls.
Yeah, overalls. Yeah.
What was the impetus for this photo?
I mean, I think it was just a mindset that we wanted to have going into this game. Like, never kept talking about how cold it's gonna be and you know, the weather. And we're like, yo, like bump all that. Like, let's go out there and have fun. And you know, I'm like, I'm gonna wear shorts and a tank top. They go, no, you ain't. I'm like, yes, I am. I show up to work. And then they all want to kind of get on the vibe, and Ed took off his top, and Boogie took off his hoodie, and we rocked out.
All right, so it kind of became a dare thing.
Yeah.
There were some noticeable non-participants. Mike Love had his bubble coat
on.
Mike Love was like, all right.
And Rousseau, the Miami guy, had his long sleeve and long pants on.
Yeah.
You couldn't get him to buy in.
This is give me a little insight here too, because this game you had all this. This foresight, the whole story in the run-up to the Dolphin game was the weather. It was going to be snowy, bad weather, you know, all of this stuff. This Chicago game is going to be – it's not going to be really that snowy, but it's going to be really, really cold, like 0 degrees kind of thing, four degrees. How is it different getting it, – or is it different? I know you got your process and you just kind of go through it. But on game day, do you wear – you know, different layers, all that kind of stuff? Or do you have a go-to set?
I wear the same stuff every week pretty much. I mean, it kind of all depends on how I'm feeling. But I'm normally no-sleeve type guy. And especially in the colder games, I don't like wearing sleeves. But, yeah, I mean, for this game, you go out there and the basic get up and make sure you get a good warm-up pregame. And kind of
keep it.
Keep the key in playing the game is trying to keep warm on the sideline the entire game. So that's kind of the key. Yeah. Key point of it.
I'm with you.
The last one I've got for you. You got a birthday coming up next week, right? Tuesday.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with that as a kid? Because there are a lot of kids. I had a friend of mine.
Christmas.
He was born on Christmas, so it was like one shot and that's it for the whole year. So where did you kind of come down on having a birthday so close to Christmas? Because Christmas is great.
Yeah.
2 days later, you got a birthday, and then you're waiting 363 days until something happens again.
Yeah. I mean, I ain't trying to be, you know, going that too deep in my past. But, you know, growing up wasn't, you know, the best for me. So, you know, the holiday season, it was kind of a hit or miss. And to me, I just really didn't think about it in that terms.
Okay,
aspect.
I gotcha.
Until I really got older. And then when you got older and hit 21, I'm like, well, you know, my birthday's on the 27th. New Year's right there. So you kind of just, you know, bring it all together and do it that way. But for me, you know, growing up, and I didn't really bother me that much. I kind of was in a different thought process.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Pre-birthday. Last one for me. Have you gotten any rumblings or any possibilities that the travel may be disrupted this year going to Chicago? Like, are you guys maybe go Thursday night or go early Fridayer than normal or anything yet like that yet? Or are they still waiting?
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no.
I didn't know if they had even begun those conversations yet. So it may be just a normal week depending on the weather.
They're here for in Chicago.
In Chicago. Oh. Getting into Chicago looks like it may be a problem for holiday travelers, which, by the way, you're playing on a holiday. Hmm. So,
well, Yeah, Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve,
so,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if they had thought, it's like, hey, guys, get your mind around the fact we might have to go a day early or later in the day or earlier in the day.
No, I haven't heard anything. Yeah. Okay.
We'll keep our eye on that. Thanks.
All right, man. Well, keep chopping wood out there on the practice field and on the game field. We appreciate you stopping by, man. It was good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that's Daquan Jones joining us here in our fresh off-the-field interview presented by Austin Air, the official clean air provider of the Buffalo Bills. We will take a break and be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Tuesday, which is serving as a Wednesday for the team today in terms of practice, knowing their game is on Saturday and they're traveling Friday. So everything accelerated this week as it is yet another game that is not taking place on a Sunday. So we press forward, and the question we're asking today on the Twitter topic, which new addition to the Bills roster this season has impressed you the most? Maybe it's Daquan Jones, who was just here in studio last segment. I mean, he has been a rock-solid force for that group throughout the season.
In a year like this, availability has been as key as anything, because the roster is talented top to bottom, in front to back. But, you know, having a guy in there that you don't have to worry about whether he's going to show up or not, you know. I mean, it's hard to pick a guy who hasn't been nicked up at some point.
Yeah, you know who else has had kind of a renaissance season? Shaq Lawson.
Oh, yeah.
Shaq has played really well this season. Just about every week he's flat. You notice him on like a play or two or three. I mean, fourth down, he's been a beast. He had that goal line stand stop a few weeks ago. You know, gets another sack against the Jets, and he's in on a play last week against the Dolphins. I mean, he's showing up. I think he's a candidate for, you know, and that's a guy we knew about already.
Right.
But, you know, after a couple of wayward years, you know, Dolphins, Texans, Jets, I don't think we really knew what to expect, but he's kind of bounced back. He looks like the old Shaq.
Yeah, he has played really well, and he's flashed. I think one of the things about it this year is he's consistent. He's been really consistent. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't just, you know, one play here, and then the next time you see him is 2 weeks later. You know,
and he's always been a good edge setter in the run front. He's been very, very good at that. So, yeah, I just like the way he's played this year. I think he's put together a solid season. And once again, Steve, it goes back to the whole Brandon Bean model. You know, bringing in veteran free agents on 1 year deals. They're motivated to play every week, you know?
Yeah, they are. And
he's an example of that,
yeah,
I think.
And Daquan Jones actually signed a two-year deal with the Bills coming in. Has been worth it, really worth it. He has played really well. Jordan Phillips coming back has been a force, although now, you know, with his shoulder, who knows how he's going to finish the season. But you mentioned he's back on the practice field today. All these guys these veteran guys that have been brought in have really made a difference. Let's not forget either that when they first got here, Brandon Bean used guys like these to set the foundation. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. I mean, those guys were foundational. But they were the first guys they signed. I remember Sean McDermott, they were like, oh, no, he's just going to sign defensive guys. He's a defensive head coach. We didn't know, you know. But certainly he knew something about Poyer and Hyde that none of us did. So guys like that have been foundational pieces to begin with. And as a group and as a policy, I don't know, philosophy, whatever you call it, it is foundational, I think, here.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, even you can run down the list, too. Change, and maybe if Von Miller doesn't get hurt, maybe he's the runaway winner in this conversation, you know, which new addition to the team has impressed you the most. Because even at his age, it was impressive. But I still think the injury kind of compromises him running away with that. And so then you can look at a host of different people, whether you want to look at the draft class. The draft class has kind of been a little bit of an enigma. You know, you had Kyir Elam platooning at the beginning of the year with Christian Benford, who was a pleasant surprise as a sixth-round draft choice. Benford gets hurt, and then Elam misses a couple of games with an ankle injury, and now he's trying to work his way back into the lineup. And, you know, you go down the list of the draft choices. James Cook is the guy that has kind of ascended through the course of the season. Not that he didn't have his own hiccups in his rookie season either. Terrell Bernard's been mostly a special teams player. Khalil Shakir's getting a little more time here down the stretch, you know, partially because they only have four healthy receivers on the active roster, and they've been calling up one from the practice squad each of the last 3 weeks. But it's kind of been an interesting season for the rookie class, you know, factoring them into the new additions on the roster.
Yeah, it's been fun, and it's always fun to see this all come together in the off season. I'll say it after this season's over as well. No matter how this one ends, that, you know, like always, you're gonna love on this team as much as you can until this season's over. Because once it's over, it ain't coming back.
Yeah.
Even if they win at all, it's gonna be a whole new cast of characters. You'll have some favorites, obviously, not the whole team, but a significant portion of the contributors are gonna move on their way. You're going to have Brandon Bean out there scouring the bushes, see if he can find, you know, some more guys to make him better. But it's been fun to watch Brandon Bean and his crew, you know, Joe Shane over the years, all these guys, pick those guys and watch them and watch it come together. It's pretty fun to watch, and it's something it has not been a philosophy that a lot of teams around the league have used.
Right. And I would say of the draft class, James Cook was the addition that had me the most excited in terms of his fit within the scope of the offense. And, you know, we didn't see that all right away. And as we said, he had some hiccups along with some of the other rookies. But I think he's the only rookie that I would even consider for this question in terms of which new addition to the Bills roster this season has impressed you the most. I think he's the only rookie that makes the candidate list.
Right.
Based on what he's done this season and his playing time increasing of late. And then after that, it's, you know, the veteran additions, you know, that were made in free agency and whatnot, like a Daquan Jones or a Shaq Lawson or a Jordan Phillips. Tim Settle's had a nice season. So,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of choices, and we're asking you for those choices. Give us one at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, number to get on board. Let's go to the tweet sheet right now, though, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving provider of the Buffalo Bills. And Daniel leads us off, and he says, my pick would be James Cook. I loved him in college. He was my favorite running back in the draft. I jumped through the roof when the Bills drafted him. He's been good so far. I just wish he would get on the field more. Go Bills. I mean, his playing time is up. There's
growing.
No debating that.
It's growing. And he's, you know, the touchdown catch last week, the runs he got last week. I thought he played as much and had a more significant role against the Dolphins this last Saturday than I'd seen him have all year, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I felt the same way that Daniel did. I when they picked him, you and I picked it. This is the only draft in history that you and I, before they made the pick, picked the guy we wanted.
Yeah.
And they got him. We got him. So here we are. I'm totally with you. I think he brings something to the field that they haven't had in a while, and now he's starting to get to that role that we thought he would fill.
And I thought he did a nice job on the touchdown pass because he had to work back to his quarterback, who's rolling to the right. He's running a route across the back of the end zone right to left. He sees his quarterback rolling out. He's in trouble. He works back to him, and because of that, he's open for the touchdown catch. So, you know, that's not something that is scripted on the play. I know they have scramble rules, but he abided by the scramble rules and made himself available to make a play. So, and that was a big touchdown. So, yeah, it's encouraging to see that from him. It's not just the scripted stuff. It's the improvisational stuff. He's actively, you know, he's engaged with that as well. So that was a big play in the game on Saturday. Robert on the tweet sheet says, Von Miller and his attitude towards every aspect of the game and embracing the history of the city and the fan base. I have to say, I think as impressive as Von Miller is as a talent, I feel like the fan base is even more impressed with his resolutely positive mindset no matter what the circumstance. I mean, he's barely out of surgery after his ACL surgery a couple of weeks ago, and he's Instagramming a video saying how he's in a great headspace and mindset and all that stuff. I mean, that I think that's the last place you'd expect him to be after an injury like that.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you never feel great after surgery. Certainly his leg had to be killing him, but I think Vaughn has shown his ability to step back and see the big picture. And he lives in that and knows that, you know, he's made a couple of really basic decisions that are in really good. And coming here was one of them, and being on this team is one of them. And I think he doesn't regret it. I know that. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, he would run away with this question had he not been hurt a couple of weeks ago and out for the season. So certainly we went through stretches of the off season. Brownie, you remember this. I was like, I keep forgetting Vaughn Miller is on our team.
Well, unfortunately, it's easier to forget now because he can't play.
I saw a guy with a number 40. We hadn't even seen him
practice.
Oh,
in the spring.
In the spring.
I remember
some
this.
Guy has a Miller jersey, number 40. I'm like, I wonder
who's Miller?
Who would put their own name? Who would put their own name on the back of a Bills jersey, a number 40? Is that a high school number? And I realized, oh, my gosh, that's Vaughn Miller.
Yeah.
He came in like that, kind of under the radar, right during the frenzy. There's like nine guys around the league who signed at the exact same time Vaughn did, so it kind of flew under the radar for everybody. And when they got to training camp and started playing and everything, it was fun.
Yeah, Jeremy on the tweet sheet says Shaq Lawson. He seems to have flown under the radar by most, even with the absence of Miller. He has been pleasantly impressive, and we kind of touched on that already. But yeah, I mean, Shaq's getting it done. I mean, you think about that Detroit game, Steve. Vaughn Miller goes out of the game. There was another – Greg Rousseau was still out of the lineup with the ankle sprain. And by the end of that game, they were down to Mike Love, Shaq Lawson, and Boogie Basham at defensive end. And he was even making plays in that game and kind of holding the fort when their rotation was severely limited. So – he's done a nice job when he's been called upon. He really has.
And I think, too, both he and Jordan Phillips and any of the other guys who left and came back, Cole Beasley even said it. You go and you think grass is greener over there. I'm going to go over there. And you find out, yeah, the money's good and all that. But, man, oh, man, I really, really like coming to work in Buffalo. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's just a, you know, we all have jobs that we go to every day, and we all do that stuff, and you think, you know, you're happy if you love your work and all that. But, man, oh, man, how rough is life when you go to work and it's like, doesn't feel quite right, you know? But something's missing. You know, certainly nothing to complain about. None of us have that much to complain about. But you know what? It was so much better back, you know, for a lot, you know, all the personal and fun reasons you like a place. And you can see it in the way Shaq plays and Jordan Phillips, his attitude, all of it. So, and Cole Beasley said, and just point blank said it.
Said it last week.
Best locker room I've ever been a part of. I wanted to come back.
We have to take a break, but when we return, there is an anniversary to note on this day, and we will get to what that is. It's 25-year anniversary. Crazy. We'll tell you what it is next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Oh, snap! Snapdragon apples are now available. Fuel your game day adventures with Snapdragon apples, now available at Wegmans. Snapdragon apples, the official apple of your Buffalo Bills. As we mentioned at the break, today is the 25th anniversary of one Steve Tasker's last NFL game.
Really?
1997.
How about it?
December 20th. In the frozen tundra of
Roll
Green
the tape.
Bay.
I know you got, yeah, I figured. There you are. There you go.
How many plays in was this? It was early, wasn't
Five
it?
Five plays.
Five plays kick into off, the game.
Kick off to the Packers. Packers 1-2-3 and out. Then they punt, which is the fifth play. Kickoff 1-2-3, yep. 2-3-4. And then the punt is the fifth play, and that's it. I'm done. Thanks, everybody.
So
appreciate
the ball.
You.
Was it a touchback? Something was ruled like a
all right, here's what
out,
happened.
Out of bounds?
The punt goes over my head. I yell poison. It was a bad punt. It bounced past me. I yelled. I waved guys off. It bounced one of our guys, Ray Jackson, goes down, and the ball bounces over him and goes into the end zone. It hit on Ray's back. It touched Ray's back as it went by him. The official saw it, called it. Green Bay picks the ball up in the end zone, touchdown. Mm. And I popped a gasket and was beefing the call because they showed the replay on the big screen. And I saw it going back to the bench. I go, ah! And I ran back saying it missed him because the angle was wrong, right? And then I saw the same video like 2 weeks later that I saw that set me off. I was like, of course it hit him. Mm. I think, what are you doing? I was a total bonehead. And I went back. I got tossed.
Yeah. And 25 years ago today.
The guy, you might recognize some of the officials there. One of them was Mike Carey, who was the CBS official, rules official for us at CBS when I was with them. Mm. And then the other guy on the crew was Mike Pereira, who is the Fox rules analyst now.
That's pretty funny.
And so the both of those guys, they were both with the league, or Mike Pereira was with the league forever. And I saw him in all my years with CBS and stuff. We'd kind of laugh about it.
So was that brought up often by those two guys whenever they see you?
Oh, yeah. I tongue-in-cheek drag him over the coals. But they
because
they know.
You made contact with one of them.
We're
that
friends.
Was the issue, right?
I was trying – you know, I was just – you saw me there.
Yeah,
that was what I got called
around.
For when I was running around
you
him. And I was you know, brushing up against him. So, you know. I no hard feelings.
25 years
probably
ago
saved me
today.
They probably saved me a busted leg.
And you got free food because you watched the game with the guy in the tunnel.
Yeah, the locker room attendant. Where at that, I think he's still there. And at that time, he was 108 years old, and I think he's still doing the job. But I went up, and he leans over. You know, you saw at the visitors. Locker room, you exit the field through a little hallway,
yeah,
right?
It's
because
tiny.
They covered up the tunnel with seats so they could sell them. So you walk up there, and the guy leans over the stairs at the end of that tunnel. There's stairs that go up. He leans over the rail and he goes, Steve, did you got thrown out? I go, yeah. He goes, well, what'd you do? And at that point, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I didn't even.
You were still coming down from your.
I didn't even. I saw the. Exchange. I thought I got. I didn't know anything. I go, you know what? I don't even know. He goes, oh, no. He goes, come on up and have a sandwich.
This is so good.
It's true.
I know.
I go up.
Uniform.
And I'll say this because it was Buffalo and they're Green Bay and they know things, you know, and they do things the right way. He has a beef on Weck.
Nice.
Gives me a beef on Weck. I still got my gloves on. My
your
game.
Full
my
uniform.
Fingers are taped. I got, you know, eye black. I just sit down in his office, put my helmet right next to me, and I'm just sitting there.
Watching the game on TV.
Drinking a Dr. Pepper. And I'm just, I don't even know what to, I'm just like in shock. Just like what? Because, you know, I got to explain it to the missus.
Yeah.
You know, my bride is watching it with all the other Bills wives back in Buffalo, and I get tossed. She's got to sit there with all those girls going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there. He's, you know, what do you do? What do you do? I didn't know what to do. I just sat there and watched the game.
Because the team wasn't going to the playoffs.
Yeah. You know, and this was after the Packers had won the world championship. They were about to go back. This was the last game of the season. So they were about to go back to the playoffs and then go back to the next Super Bowl as well and lose to the Broncos. And so they were lumping us up. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't nowhere to be found.
25 years ago today. Amazing.
That's amazing.
Let's quickly squeeze a phone call in here before we go to break. We'll go to Frank in Williamsville, who's been waiting. What do you got for us, Frank?
Yeah, I got a couple of coaching things here. First of all, if you think it's going to snow as the game goes on and get worse, wouldn't you want the ball after you win the coin toss to start the game?
Yeah.
Rather than that, yeah, that's one thing. And real quick, the other thing I was going to ask you was the guy who ran into the kicker, was that? Didn't the coach tell him, like, don't even come close to that punter? You just got a three and out, and the defense had to go back out there again.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah, that.
No question about it. Yeah. You if you're not going to get the ball on the punt, you don't. Don't do that.
Right.
And there was no question, too. It was a mistake. Yeah, no question about it.
That was
and
the only touchdown that Miami scored in the second half. The defense was off the field. They had him stopped.
Yeah.
And they get a fresh set of downs, and that was the Tyreek Hill touchdown drive. But they had them off. They wouldn't have scored a touchdown in the second half without that.
Yeah. So there's that. And as for the coin toss, yeah, I mean, there are certain ways, like the New England game here last year, where it's 40-mile-an-hour winds. Maybe you do that. And there was some talk as well on the broadcast of this last Saturday night. Maybe if you think the weather is going to hit halftime, you make a different call about the coin toss. Or if it's going to hit in the first quarter, the second quarter, whenever the weather's going to hit, you try and time it so the other team gets the worst of the weather and you get the best of it, the wind ways and stuff. Yes, but they knew it wasn't going to come till later in the game. And by winning the toss, that gives you an extra hour and a half into the game, halftime. Because at halftime, defer, you could still kick it and pick an end. You could still give them the ball and pick the end of the field that you want. So by winning the toss and deferring, knowing that the weather's coming later in the game, that still gives you the choice to do what you want in the second half.
The Bills actually did that in week four. They won the coin toss in Baltimore. There was supposed to be terrible rain coming in the second half, or at least late in the first half. So they said, hey, let's just take the ball now while the weather's still decent and hope we can make something of it. Of course, the Bills had to come back in the second half, down 10 in that game, and ended up winning with a last-second field goal, similar to the one we saw just last Saturday. Sometimes that does happen, and you know, the coaching staff says, hey, let's take the ball now while the weather's good before weather dramatically impacts what we're trying to do on offense here with our game plan. We got to take a break here, but hour number two will include Bills defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier, who is addressing the media. We'll get some of his thoughts coming up on this Chicago game, which includes a homecoming of sorts for him, being a former Chicago Bear. We'll hear from Leslie Frazier in hour number two here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
You bet your bippy, it's One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, hour number two. And as promised, Bills defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier addressing the media after practice today, talking not only about a homecoming of sorts as he goes back to play against the team that he once played for as a player, cornerback for the Chicago Bears, including the famed 85 team, but also the task that is Justin Fields. Here is Coach.
Coach, how dangerous is Justin Fields?
Man, Mookie, a 1,000-yard rusher at quarterback, I mean, that doesn't happen very often, and he's dangerous. I mean, he's extremely dangerous with his speed, and he's got a good arm as well. He can throw the football. He's not just a one-dimensional quarterback, but for sure his strength is scrambling and making plays with his feet. I mean, they have a lot of design quarterback runs because of that, so he's really good carrying that football.
How much do you carry over from facing Lamar earlier in the year and even somewhat recently a few times to combat and defend a guy like Fields?
Yeah, I think you have to look back a little bit and just see some of the things that we did against Lamar, and I'm sure they're doing the same thing. And I mean, Lamar's outstanding running quarterback and can throw it as well, and they're similar in a lot of ways, but yeah, you do reflect back a little bit on some of the things you've done in the past.
Obviously, I mean, you're fourth. You were fourth in the league in run defense. It sounds like you're not worried that the Dolphins unlocked a problem that everyone can just exploit.
Well, like I said, you don't want people to feel comfortable running the ball, and you know, we had some situations where, not only this year, but in years past, where someone had some success running the ball, and then you got to regroup, you got to learn from it, and and play it better going forward. And we've been able to do that in the past, and you like to believe that we can do it again. So.
What's been the vibe in the media rooms when you guys are looking at that tape and talking about some of those missed tackles? When these are proud guys that have had a great season, I'm sure that there is probably an energy around fixing the problems that you diagnosed.
You're absolutely right, Matt. There is an energy around that, and guys do have a lot of pride, and they want to get better at that part of the game. Because in the NFL, on defense, you have to tackle. Now, this time of the year, you can't really work on it the way you want to. You don't have on pads. This is a non-padded week for us. But you have to mentally put yourself in that frame of mind to be able to go out and tackle and get guys to the ground. That's a big part of being successful on defense. And, you know, our guys have rebounded in the past when it comes to that. Now, this week, we're playing the team that has the most rushing yards on average per game than anybody in the league. So, you know, we'll have our hands full in the run game, and we got to do a good job versus the run.
I was just going to say, how much can getting Jordan Phillips back help with that if he's able to play?
I think Jordan will definitely help us, Elena, but it still takes 11 guys. But it'll be great to have him back, and hopefully coming off this injury, he can go out and give us, you know, something similar to what he did prior to the injury. And if that's the case, that'll help us for sure. But it takes all 11 guys.
You brought up Christian a moment ago, and he's eligible to return for 2 weeks here. What does that all look like when you have another player that you want to get on the field? Because you guys have, you know, split snaps with two guys before, but I don't recall you've done it with three before. So how does that all look?
Yeah, you know, it remains to be seen. You know, I don't see us going three or four guys either, so it'd be good to get Christian back when the time comes, and then we'll sort it out when that time comes. Things change so much from week to week, but we'll see where we are when he's able to get back on the field.
It's been the balance for a while of hoping for some continuity there, but also wanting to get different looks at guys. Is it any different at this point in the season where there's only a few regular season games left of, like, do you need to solidify it a bit more, or is it still kind of wanting to weave people in?
Yeah, I think Catherine is beginning to clear up a little bit. This last game, I think, helped us in a lot of ways to create some clarity, just being able to see Kyrie go out and play as well as he played. And hopefully, between he and Dane, they can put back-to-back games together. It's great to have Trey back out there competing. So I think things are beginning to clear up for us. Hopefully, this next week will solidify some things in our mind as we get closer to the end of the regular season. But, you know, it's still taking views at guys for now, but hopefully it's Dane and Kyrie, and we'll see where it goes from there.
You mentioned a little week ago, it's good to see Trey progressing. You understand he's not going to be Trey probably for a bit here, but did you notice another step forward in even just his personality and the way he carried himself and certainly the play against the Dolphins?
Yeah, I thought, John, it was a really good week in preparation for him, better even than the weeks before. His confidence, you could see it growing, and he made some really good plays on the ball in that game as well against, you know, an outstanding receiver. So I think it was a big step for him to go up against that type of competition to get another gauge of where he is and what he needs to work on. So, and that's just part of the process. But I think it was a good game for him to be able to get a feel for where he's at.
He mostly had him shadow Waddle, and I know most people would think go with Tyreek. So what went into that decision?
Well, we were doing some things strategically for Tyreek, and that kind of played into that. So without getting into too much detail, yeah.
Do you, like, you know, we've talked all season about the value of Taron. Was there any point, I get the that you would not be, that's your defense, Taron. You know, you're not, I mean, unless they come out with, you know, 10 offensive tackles, you're not taking Taron off. What do you think? I mean, Taron is your guy.
Yeah. I mean, Taron has done a great job for us, as you know, over the last few years, and he's a big reason why we've been able to play good defense. So
you don't want somebody to run you out of your nickel.
No, you know, you have to be conscious of that possibility, and we do have some contingencies. And But the way we played the run better in the second half kind of solidified, you know, we have some answers. If you're not in your gap, it doesn't matter if we're in base personnel or not. It doesn't. If you don't tackle, it doesn't matter what personnel you have on the field. So When it's that issue, that's one thing versus schematically, you know, you can't get it done with that personnel that's on the field. But missed tackles, gap integrity, that's a different matter.
Ken talked about how he's got two game plans if it's an extreme weather situation. You know, you had the extreme weather game against New England here last year. Is it almost like, do you have two game plans, or it's just you focus on this side of the call sheet?
No, you do need to have a contingency for sure, because weather, like that New England game, can really change strategy. And, you know, we've been in a few weather games over the years, and you do have to have a plan if things get so severe that it alters the passing game or it affects the run game, whatever it may, the footing on the field. So you have to think those things through ahead of time, and you hope whatever you go to works. You know?
DeMar Hamlin, he's a second-year player, but at safety, kind of say that he's kind of like a rookie, right? Because he's starting games, playing for a long stretch of time. How have you seen him handle that role and assess what you've seen out of him from a playing perspective, especially the last couple of weeks?
I think, Matt, he's really grown over the last, say, 3 or 4 weeks. He's really taken a big jump. He's tackling better. Still an area he wants to continue to improve on. But the biggest leap has been his confidence and being able to communicate. We counted on Micah and Jordan for so long to communicate on the back end with the rest of our secondary and linebackers and to help Tremaine. Well, you know, losing Micah, we lost some of that, and Jordan has been kind of in and out of the lineup at times. So we needed DeMar to step up verbally, and he's begun to do that, and that's big for our pass defense and our run defense as well. So it's good to see him growing in that area.
What have you seen from Micah behind the scenes? Like, what has he been like in terms of going through this? He hasn't missed time like this before.
It's a good question, Elena. He's been really good for us in the meetings. I've referenced him so many times with DeMar, with DaQuan Johnson, and just trying to get those guys to go back and look at some of Micah's tape to be able to get a feel for how he operated. And but his words of encouragement to those guys, his being at practice, his watching tape with them, all those things have to help them. And that's one of the reasons I think DeMar has gotten better as the year's gone on, because of Micah's presence, as opposed to if he were not in the building, not around. I think that would kind of hurt us a little bit. He's been a big plus for us.
The sideline with a headset and all that, or are you like, should we bring you on as a coach?
Yeah, he's been good in that respect as far as communicating and talking to the guys and encouraging them. And so, you know, appreciate what he's doing. He may have a future in coaching one day, for sure.
What did you think of Greg's game, Greg Rousseau against them?
Greg has continued to play well for us, Mark. He had another good game for us. There were a couple plays that if he weren't on the field, you know, I wonder how those plays would have gone. So he played well in that ball game, and it's just good to have him back on the field. Those games when we didn't have him, you could really feel the difference, and you can feel the difference when he's on the field as well.
You guys clinched a playoff spot on Saturday, you know, 4 seasons in a row. Did you have a chance to reflect on that and what it means for the Bills organization to have that level of success?
Yeah, it's so hard to sit back and reflect, because you go from playing that game on a Saturday to coming in on a Monday in preparation for another Saturday game. So you don't really have a chance to take a deep breath, maybe after the season. But there's so much that we want to accomplish as a team. And I know for me personally, you're not really in a reflective mode yet. You know, you're thinking about the next opponent and what you have to get done. Although, you know, we're all proud of the fact that we've made the playoffs again, but, you know, there's more. So, you know, I don't think any of us have sat around and thought a whole lot about that achievement, although it's quite an achievement for sure.
What's windier, Soldier Field or Highmark Stadium?
Oof. I played in some very, very windy games at Soldier Field, but I don't know if I played in one quite like the one we had against New England a year ago, but a lot of windy games at Soldier Field. It would be close between the two. Yes. So, all right.
And that would be a guy that would know, having played there for 5 seasons. I distinctly remember a playoff game between the Bears and the Giants in the 85 playoffs. Giants come to Chicago. That was the game when Sean Lindetta went to punt a football and missed it.
Whiffed.
Because the wind blew it 3 feet to the right. from the time he dropped it to the time he tried to kick it with his foot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Dude. Yeah, that's pretty windy.
Because I remember Brian Moorman, when he used to punt here, he said there had been times where from his drop point to trying to kick it, it would move over about 6 inches. And he would have to adjust his leg to still make mm-hmm. contact with the ball. Lendetta obviously did not do that for the Giants, completely whiffed on the ball. Now, he may have also been intimidated by a pass rush that was screaming at his head on that play as well. But, yeah, the win there can get pretty stupid. How was it at Northwestern? Was it bad there, like in the stadium there?
I don't remember ever having a game like that.
Yeah.
I had a couple of cold games, yeah, but not windy.
Now, your season ends sooner than the NFL season,
yeah,
thankfully, for you.
We didn't go to bowl games when I was at Northwestern. When I showed up, they were 0-31. So, we never had cold, yes, absolutely cold.
Yeah.
But wind, I don't remember.
Coach Frazier sounded very encouraged by the way Kyir Elam played in last week's game against the Dolphins. Let's not forget, this was a guy that was a healthy and active a couple of weeks ago for the New England game, if my memory serves me correct, and has slowly worked his way back into the lineup. He platoons with Dane Jackson last week, and I thought he was playing with an urgency and an intensity that I think we all thought we would and could see from Kyir Elam. I would argue his performance was good enough to earn him even more playing time this week. And knowing it is a week-to-week league, I don't know. I think he gets more playing time this week than he even did last week in that platooning situation with Dane Jackson.
Yeah, and we were talking, too, about the fact that I don't know how much the Chicago Bears skill guys scare you on the outside. If you were going to go out and just, like, sell out and say, listen, here's how we're going to play this team. Let's see if they can do it. This may be one of those teams. We were talking to Daquan Jones just a minute ago. I said, do you go in there, go three linebackers, go heavy in the box, and play man on the outside? And, you know, you got N'Keal Harry, Chase Claypool, Equanimeous St. Brown, Byron Pringle. These guys, those are the four top wideouts.
Top four, yeah.
Kyir Elam, Tre'Davious White. Let's see what you got. You know, if you can shake loose with a single high safety, we'll see if you can do it. That may be the time to do it this game.
Yeah, because playing two safeties deep is not the recipe against this Bears team. They're just going to run the football, especially if it's windy.
Unless Josh in the offense smells blood in the water, they go out and they hang 28 points on you in a half.
Well,
and then you got to catch up.
Yeah. That would change the complexion of the game.
Let me say this. That's the best kind of complimentary football right there.
Here's 28 defense.
Here's 28 in the first half.
Have fun getting after the passer.
Yeah, there you go. That's fun.
But even when you get after the passer with Justin Fields, if he escapes, it's a lot like a Josh situation.
Very much so.
They may be forced to stop running the ball in the conventional way, whether it's a design run for Fields or something with Jordan Montgomery, they get behind by two or three scores, it doesn't mean the threat of Justin Fields running is over. I mean, I still remember a few weeks ago, he runs over the Miami sideline, and Mike McDaniel, the head coach of the Dolphins, is saying, will you knock that off? He says it right to Justin Fields as he's walking by. You got to stop doing that. Like, tongue-in-cheek, of course, but
right.
Because of his improvisational running when,
it's
you know,
always,
he didn't like what he saw downfield, he's giving them fits.
It's always, and the Dolphins know this from playing Josh so much, it is the great equalizer. It doesn't matter how bad things are going or how great they're going for your defense. You got a guy like Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts or Justin Fields or Lamar Jackson who just, yeah, you know what, it's 3rd and 15. Watch me pick this up. We saw Josh do it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, just tumble up over the top, get it. Okay, let's go.
Well, and here is an indicator that Chicago does that. We know they're the number one running team in football, but we also know they're the worst passing team in football. If you had to guess, Steve, what would you estimate their third down conversion rate league ranking to be with those two numbers?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say,
what would be your guess?
They run the ball a lot.
Right. But third down conversion percentage, where do you think they rank in the league?
Bottom two or three.
They are seventh.
Oh, top seventh
in the league in third down conversion percentage with the worst passing game in football.
That's because you got a quarterback that can run it. Yeah.
You're in manageable down and distance and manageable enough where you can run for it half the time, probably.
I've laughed a couple of different times. In 2020, when Josh exploded onto the scene, and in times since, the broadcast will give you a shot of the opposing defensive coordinator. In 2020, they gave you a shot of Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator of San Francisco. And Josh is throwing it all over the yard and then snapping off runs. He's over there, and he had a mask on. Remember, everybody had to wear masks? He had a mask on below his nose. And his look on his eyes were like he was just trying to think his way out of what he could do to stop the Bills' offense, and he was out of ammunition.
Out of answers.
He was out of answers. He's sitting there watching Josh pinpoint throws over the linebackers, under the safeties, on the money, to a receiver, in stride, and then snapping off, breaking a tackle, and jumping loose and going and converting a third down. He's sitting there looking at – he's gazing off into the distance with this stare that's 1,000 yards away. And he has no answers. Then, a couple of weeks later, the Bills roll into Denver in Mile High, and Vic Fangio is the head coach defensive coordinator for the Broncos. Josh snaps off a 21-yard touchdown run after throwing it all over the yard, and then he snaps off a 21-yard touchdown run, and Vic Fangio's got the play sheet in his hand, and he's over there like – checking for rain with the play sheet in his hand. Even. Yeah. He's like going, and his hands just drop, and his shoulders just slump.
Hey, you're dejected.
You can't – there's no defense for that.
Yeah.
And Chicago uses Justin Fields the same way, although Justin doesn't throw it anywhere near like the Bills do with Josh Allen and company. They do the same thing with Jalen Hurts. Lamar Jackson, their whole offense is built around him doing it. You know, it's just – these defensive coordinators, there's just no easy answer. And what it comes down to is this. You got to have a defensive athlete make a play on him. You outrun him, catch him, get a hand on him, pull him down, sack him. Mm-hmm. A couple of offensive linemen got to blow their assignments, and you got to get in on them, right? That's the only hope you've got. You can stop their run game, their under center, handoff, straight handoff kind of stuff. The Bills aren't that good at it or whatever, but when he drops back to pass, even when you get a free rusher or you get pressure on him, the guy rolls out to his right, jumps in the air, out of bounds, and throws a touchdown pass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a tough day at the office for a defensive coordinator.
Not easy, for
sure. And the Bills aren't the only ones that do it. Fields is doing it, and like you said, they're a top 10 third down conversion, and they don't throw it.
Right. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, Chicago's top-ranked rushing attack may be getting even stronger this week. We'll explain why next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. We mentioned before the break that Chicago Bears' rushing attack, ranked number one in the league, could be getting stronger this week. They just announced today that Khalil Herbert, backup running back to starter Jordan Montgomery, has been activated off the injured reserve list where he had been for the better part of the last month with a hip injury. There is no certainty that he'll be in the lineup on Saturday, but with a good practice week, fresh set of legs, could be back in the lineup for them this week, and that would upgrade their rushing attack.
Absolutely.
Because he is a good change of pace back to Jordan Montgomery.
He's got 108 carries for 643 yards, right at 6 yards a carry, and he's got a long of 63 on the year and 4 touchdowns. Yeah, that's
I think
a guy
he's got a couple of 100-yard rushing games, too. Montgomery missed some time.
Yeah, he can play. His stats say it, and they bear it out. The guy that's in there also, Montgomery, who's got 172 carries for just under 700 yards. He's at 4 yards per carry, but, you know, and then they've got, like the Bills, Justin Fields, who's got 1,000 yards at 7 yards a carry, carried it 143 times so far this year.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if Herbert is up this week and playing. You know, this time of year, Steve, I don't have to tell you this, but running backs are a beat-up bunch. I mean, I don't even care if you got a committee backfield, but a guy like Jordan Montgomery, he's probably hanging a little bit here going into week 16. You can get a guy that's been on IR with a fresh set of legs coming out on the field. He's going to look faster than everybody.
That's right. And it's interesting because Chicago's team stats are a lot like Buffalo's. You know, the distribution of touches and all that, except for one thing. One guy on Buffalo gets a ton of targets and has a ton of catches, Diggs. Chicago does not have that.
Right.
Their guys
and that's due partly because of injury. Mooney is one of their top receivers. Right. He went out with a season-ending injury.
He still leads the team in receptions. He has 40. Then it's Kmet with 39, Montgomery with 28, St. Brown with 18. So they do not throw the ball well at all, and the Bills are just the opposite. They got four guys with 40 or more catches. Of course, you know, Steph with 99. Singletary, the running back's got 35. So the Bills have a more potent throwing offense without question. But they're, you know, they spread it around.
Yeah.
So you really wonder how Leslie Frazier and the defensive staff see the Bears offense.
Right. And David Montgomery is not he's not a breakaway threat in the run game. As a matter of fact, a lot of his skill set is similar to that of Devin Singletary. He's a good contact balance back. He's a guy that gets yards after initial contact. Not quite as shifty as Motor, but has that ability. But he's not a guy that's going to run away from defensive backs, even if he breaks through the second level for long touchdowns.
They're not that far away in the way they do. I'll give you an example. Montgomery has 170 runs on the year. He's carried 170. His long is 28.
Yeah, that's my point.
Right. And now Devin Singletary has 158, so he's like 12 less. His long is 30. They're kind of the same guy. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And they were in the same draft, taking two picks apart.
Right. So
both third-round draft choices. And, you know, productive guys, but just not supreme athletic breakaway threat. Neither of these guys are going to be mistaken for, like, a Breece Hall. You know what I mean?
Right. Or a Mostert or whoever. You know, they're just not that fast. But still, I think you can say both guys, the team trusts them. You know, and that's what Devin Singletary brings. Hard-nosed running, makes a guy miss, can run inside. Unlike the beginning part of maybe Motor's career, he doesn't turn it over very much.
Right. And Khalil Herbert, don't get me wrong, Khalil Herbert's not a burner either. I mean, he runs in the four or fives, but there's a little more suddenness to his game. I don't know if I'd quite call him explosive, but there's a little more of a stop-start quality to his running, and he's one cut downhill go. Like, there's no dancing with him.
Right.
And he's been productive when he's been called upon. So we'll see if the Bears get Khalil Herbert back into the lineup in the offensive backfield for them this week. We do want to get to the locker room following practice today. Ike Butker, who has been activated off reserve PUP and is now part of the 53-man roster, is a possibility to be up and active this week. It's unlikely he's in the starting lineup. We know this team is one that likes to ramp players up, even though he has been part of the practice setting for the past 3 weeks while on reserve PUP. But we thought we'd get some thoughts from Ike Butker, what he's thinking about now that he's back on the 53-man roster and almost a year removed now from his season-ending Achilles injury of 2021. Here is Ike.
We know we talked to you, a couple weeks ago when the window opened. How differently do you feel now than when we spoke to you and you said you kind of need to get your legs under you?
I just feeling a lot better every week. I've seen a big jump just in confidence in the way I'm moving. And this week's, you know, the same. Just really happy to be out there and happy for the opportunity.
Is it wild? It's kind of ironic. Trey, 1 year almost from his injury, now almost a year away from yours. Was this kind of your timeline here to say, okay, I think let's get this back within a year?
Yeah, I mean, in my head for sure. A lot of prayers and just really felt like this was going to be about the time from way back. I told, you know, Joe Meeke in the training room, like, I'd really like to be back by Christmas, and just so happened to work out about perfectly, and I couldn't be happier with how it's feeling.
It seems like your time here has kind of been like a seizing an opportunity when, you know, unfortunately it seems to pop if someone goes down. It kind of seems like you're in that same position here this week. Do you kind of see the timing you know, unfortunately with Mitch or whatever, the timing almost perfect for the team?
I mean, yeah, I'm taking it one day at a time, and I'm trying to get myself ready if the team needs me, and that's really my mindset. You know, I'm not, you know, planning on anything. I'm just taking it one day at a time, and if my number's called, I'll be ready to go.
How big of a mental hurdle has it been the last few months for you?
Yeah, it's, you know, a challenge every day. It's been a challenge every day just to keep that drive and that hunger alive, just with it being so long. But, you know, I've got a super supportive family, and I have a strong faith, and that's really helped me. And to be honest, once my 21-day period got activated, I was like, I don't know, it almost seemed like yesterday that it went really fast to me. So, you know, it was a grind, but I learned a lot about myself, and, you know, my family, like I said, was my wife especially was super supportive, and she really stepped up and took care. I was our third child this year, so she had three kids instead of two this year, so she did a great job.
Can you shed any light on what you learned about yourself? Because a year away from what you do, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say I really want, number one, how much I miss football and being out there with the guys. I have been, and my wife said it last week. She's like, you're in such a better mood. I'm like, yeah, because I'm back to doing what I love to do. And just being back out there with the guys at practice has been awesome. And just the energy I wake up with every morning, it's just different. So I'd say that. And then just, you know, that determination and what it takes to come back from an injury like this. And I think going through it once already, you know, my senior year in college really helped. But I'm hoping that this is the end of those. So I haven't really had any other injuries besides Achilles. So I guess it's my Achilles heel, but I got them out the way.
Rep to rep, when you're back out on there in the practice field, especially in the team stuff, what are the biggest challenges or what have you noticed about, like, oh, this isn't the same that it was before?
Honestly, nothing. I feel, you know, significantly stronger just from all the time I've spent in the weight room. I'd say the biggest thing for me right now is just catching back up to the speed. But that's coming. That's coming along very nice. And, you know, that first week back out, I was like, either these people got way faster or I slowed down. But, you know, week four now, I don't feel that way at all. So, you know, I'm happy to see that.
I feel like a lot of guys around here are called Stallion.
Yeah.
But I feel like you might have been the first one to be called that. Is that true?
I think I might have brought that to the Bills a few years
ago. How did that originate?
The guys in college just called me that, and I just think it's a good compliment to give guys, so started calling people it and caught on.
All right, so Ike Butker, that's the best mood I've ever seen him in. Steve and I, when, you know, we're making our way through the office here, we'll kind of make our way through a hallway that splits the weight room and the athletic training room. And sometimes those doors are always open just so guys can pass through easily. And very often we'll see guys either doing rehab training or strength and conditioning training. And
yeah, I mean, we've seen them all in there.
Two dozen times in the last 9 months, we've probably seen Tre'Davious White and Ike Butker, because right, those two guys had long-term rehabilitation.
We've already seen Vaughn in there. You know? So we run into these guys, and Ike had said too, and don't know if you know, I think Sean McDermott said this in one of his interviews about Ike Butker. Ike had a setback in April with his Achilles, so he had to like have it redone, or there, you know, something else had to be. He had to get a second surgery.
Yeah,
and so that was a setback for him. So he had to start like from scratch in April, 5 months after the injury happened, when he got it fixed right away. It took a while for him to get back.
Right.
And he's been working really hard at it. And think about it. How much you just take your Achilles, you know, you take your body for granted, but your Achilles tendon, how much do you have to trust that thing?
Yeah, and not only that, you know, for those not familiar with the way it works, at least the last time I checked, because I'm not a doctor, but when you have your Achilles reattached, they don't reattach the two ends that ruptured end to end. They overlap them. And the reason it takes so long to come back from that injury is your rehabilitation regimen is required to get that Achilles tendon back to its original length. So that overlap piece has to be strengthened and, you know, conditioned, treated, massaged, everything until it gets back to the original length. Because if it's not, now you're going to have one Achilles tendon longer than the other, and that's not a good recipe getting right. back to a sport like football with 300-pound men leaning on a lineman like Ike Butker. So that's why it takes so long to get it back to the original length while still maintaining its original strength. But that's as happy as I've seen Ike Butker in a calendar year, by far.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Isn't that the vibe you got from him?
Yeah, it's got it. I remember what it's like to get out and start practicing and feel like you're a part of the team again. We've heard time and time again, we talked about it today on the show. We talk about it every day, and we hear evidence of it every day on the show, what the culture is here. But when you're injured and you're not in the locker room helping out, practicing every day, out there with the guys every day, you don't feel like you're a part of it. And to have Ike Butker all of a sudden back in the mix, he's got to feel really good. You could see it on his face how great it was for him to be a part of the team again, on the 53 roster too. Uh-huh. I mean, it's not like he's on the practice squad or on anything. He's on the team. That's
right.
You could tell it meant something to him. It makes him feel great, and it's been a long road back, and there's got to be a great sense of satisfaction and accomplishment for him, and congratulations to him.
And I tweeted this yesterday when the announcement came down that he was activated to the 53-man roster from reserve PUP. The timing could not have been better, because with Mitch Morse currently in concussion protocol and knowing it is his sixth documented concussion, it's hard to know how quickly he'll be able to make his way through concussion protocol on a short week, no less. So to have the depth of Butker, I think, is valuable this week, knowing that it's probably going to be Ryan Bates or Greg Van Roten manning the center spot, the other guy manning guard. So just to know you have him in reserve, I think, probably has this offensive staff breathing a little easier, even though he hasn't played in almost a calendar year. This week coming up, week 16, this weekend is the weekend he suffered that injury last year in New England, and then Ryan Bates stepped into the starting lineup for him. So good to see him back. I know the offensive staff's probably happy to have him back as a depth piece, at least right now, and if it turns into something more, all the better. We have to take a break here. Steve and I back to wrap up a Tuesday edition of One Bills Live next. We'll see you in 2 seconds. All right, some final thoughts of yours on the tweet sheet where we were asking you today which new addition to the Bills roster this season has impressed you the most. And DW says, Daquan Jones, 100%. He's freed up the linebackers from having to cover multiple gaps, very sound against the run, and a better pass rusher than I expected. He's the player we always wanted Star Latulale to be. I will say, coming back from COVID year off, Star Latulale, I don't know what it was last year. It just looked like he lost some of his mojo. And maybe when you pull yourself from the game and the weekly grind and the competition and, you know what I mean?
Because like, of COVID. He opted out the COVID year.
Right. Came back last year and just didn't seem like the same player.
Yeah, he had trouble getting back into it. There's moments when he had, you know, great play. He had a sack in the Patriot playoff game, but that was the last play he made as a pro. He's not anywhere. So,
yeah.
Daquan has been an upgrade because of his consistency and his production, his availability. No question.
Primetime Bill says, often overlooked, Sam Martin. How about that? A vote for the punter. He was busy the last couple of weeks. Let's not forget the Bills game against the Jets. They had to punt on their first five possessions. And more often than not, I mean, he's a proven veteran punter in this league, but he's had a couple of coffin corner punts this year. Have been good. Been good about pinning the opponent down inside the 20, inside the 10.
Tyler Bass isn't complaining about him holding. So, he's doing his entire job really well. So, that's good to see. I get it, but I don't know. He'd be the most underrated. So,
from Always Be Rocking, Daquan Jones and the return of Jordan Phillips. Best DT group we've had in forever. What do you think about this four-man unit when they're healthy?
Well, when they're healthy, they're
a pretty
alone.
Good
it's very
quartet.
Good. Very good. Now, you know, you're going back, you got some pretty good defensive tackle groupings.
Right. I mean, I recall Ted Washington, Pat Williams tandem that was pretty good.
You couldn't move those guys with a bulldozer.
But that's just two guys. Like, for a top four, you didn't rotate them back then as much
either.
No,
they didn't rotate there. But, man, oh, man. Yeah, that's good, though. That he is good. And that has really made a difference, no question about it. Daquan has been
a rock in there. It was good to have him in studio. Good to talk to him. And a Binghamton area native. So how about that? He's a New York State native, too. You don't see that much anymore. Right. Big show tomorrow, which will include sound from Josh Allen off the practice field and Bears defensive tackle Corey Wooten. We'll see you then.